Face the hammer.
Hello and welcome to Thor's Hammer Radio. I'm your host, Alex Thorson. We're going to be doing a shorter segment today, and I'm going to be doing several of these in addition to the regular podcast episodes, which I will be coming out with every Monday. In these shorter segments, I'm going to hone in on singular issues. And today, we're going to be talking about conservatism, what it means, and the conscience of a conservative. So the obvious question on everyone's mind regarding conservatism, well, what is it? Is it an ideology? No, it's not an ideology. Conservatism is an understanding based on history and human experience, built up over thousands of years of human history. We conservatives know through history that when you centralize government, it doesn't make anyone richer, except the people at the top, the people who are the rulers. We know this from just learning history, learning all the despots, monarchs, everyone who sought to control the individual. We conservatives understand that society is a collection of individuals, whereas the statists, the leftists, they believe that society is a monolithic block, or blocks of groups of people. And that's not how societies function, because there's no such thing as human beings who are exactly the same. Everyone's an individual. And this is why these societies that try and operate as big monolithic blocks, they always fail. And the reason is simple, ladies and gentlemen, because you can't create a society that enforces equality. There's always going to be your free, independent thinkers who want to excel. Just think about a place of employment where there's no incentives to do better, where there's no pay incentives to do better. How are the employees there? Well, they're generally lazy. And they're lazy because there's no incentive, no monetary incentive, to do better. They're just going to stick with the status quo because they know that no matter how hard they work, they're never going to get paid anymore. They're never going to get recognized for their achievements. And this is exactly what happens in these communist societies, in these societies that promote equality over freedom and ingenuity. That people get lazy, people get complacent, and this is exactly what happened in the old Soviet Union. We conservatives understand that when you place a value on the individual, and you place the value on ingenuity, and you set the sky's the limit for what someone can do and what someone can make, this promotes wealth. This promotes a generation of wealth. And what's happened over time, as we conservatives have seen, is that in the beginning, when it was despotism and monarchy and feudalism, societies, in order to earn wealth, well, gain wealth, is they confiscated it. They conquered others, and they took their wealth. Only when the free market was realized and the invisible hand kicked in, as Adam Smith described it, did you actually see a creation of wealth. No more did you see this huge emphasis on raiding and pillaging and trying to steal wealth from somebody else, but you saw businesses coming up and an exchange of ideas, exchange of information, and exchange of goods and services, and this led to a massive creation of wealth. And this wealth creation was expanded further in the Industrial Revolution. And over time with the Industrial Revolution, what happened is that as businesses brought in more revenue from increased production and increased sales, is that they were able to expand their facilities and employ more workers and also pay them better wages. And this is ultimately what leads to the creation of wealth. Furthermore, conservatives understand that the creation of wealth and free market capitalism is the most humane thing that humanity has ever created. Because conservatives understand that in order to do the statist route, which is redistribution of wealth, You have to take away from somebody else's wealth. You have to infringe upon someone else's right or rights. And this is the antithesis of freedom. In order to take wealth from somebody else and distribute it amongst the masses, the groups of people, the monolithic block, as the statists would describe it as, that means you have to infringe upon someone else's God-given rights. And conservatives understand about natural rights. Just look at John Locke in his second treatise on government. And John Locke talks about the two different kinds of freedoms. The first one is freedom within the state of nature, and freedom within the nature of government. And what he's talking about here when John Locke talks about these two different kinds of freedoms is that human beings have their natural God-given rights just from the moment of birth, and then they also have these rights with how they coincide with societies. And this goes to the idea which is outlined in the Ninth Amendment of the United States Constitution, that you can't try and use your rights or your perceived rights to infringe upon somebody else's rights. That's what John Locke was essentially referring to in freedom with regards to being in society. And conservatives have understood this for a long time, this idea of natural rights, God-given rights, and the fact that you cannot deny or disparage somebody else's rights. This is why conservatives, we push back against this idea of no platforming someone, the idea of censoring somebody, because that's infringing upon their rights. This is why conservatives push back on all these attacks the left makes on the Second Amendment, because that infringes upon somebody's right. And with regards to the Second Amendment, conservatives understand that in order to safeguard your freedoms, and just to safeguard your own life, you have the God-given right to defend yourself. And no one, and I say again, nobody has the right to tell you otherwise. If somebody chooses for themselves to not arm themselves or not defend themselves, that's their own choice. But they do not have the right to tell you that you cannot defend yourself. That's exactly what the Second Amendment was for. And conservatives have long understood this. As the same that conservatives have long understood that religious freedom, as outlined in the First Amendment, or really defended in the First Amendment, no one has the right to tell you you can't worship or follow whichever religion you want. We conservatives know that the First Amendment is to stop the government from instituting a state religion. But when it comes to private prayer and ceremony, and when it comes to following whichever religion you so choose, or no religion for that matter, that's your God-given right, and no one has the right to tell you otherwise. Conservatives have also long understood the truth about the Constitution, which is that the Constitution is there to limit government. It's not there to limit you. Just look at how it's worded. Government shall not infringe. Government does not have the right to infringe. That's exactly what the Constitution's there for. It's there to protect the individual. It's not there to protect the majority or the minority or any particular sect. It's there to protect the individual. And it's important to understand this when liberals and leftists in general, and especially the statists, when they push on this idea of the Constitution as a living, breathing document. Conservatives understand that if you believe in a more centralized government, you believe in a more muscular government, well, that's not an American idea at all. The American idea, which is the idea that the government needs to be limited and that the individual is protected above all else, that's a new idea in the history of the world. The history of the human race has been a long history of the government gaining total power and oppressing its own people. And this idea of a living, breathing document that the left pushes all the time, well, of course the founders could not foresee the different technologies that come out, but that doesn't change the principle of it. The principle of freedom of speech applies to radio, TV, internet, all of that. Because guess what? There's still platforms of speech. there are still platforms in which individuals express their opinions and ideas. And to try and limit or regulate that is to go against exactly what is enshrined in the First Amendment, and in fact is enshrined in the very Declaration of Independence. It's important to understand, the Declaration of Independence is the founding document of America. The Constitution is the engine, as it were, that drives it and protects that idea. So it's important to understand that while the technologies get updated and change and new technologies form, the principles remain the same. And that's why the founders wrote this Constitution, why they drafted it the way they did, in order to limit government. Of course, they couldn't foresee all of the ingenuity, all the advances that the individuals out there continuously create, continuously strive for. But they could foresee that a government would try and step in and become tyrannical and try and overtake them. And so that's why they drafted the Constitution in the manner that it is, in order to protect the individual so that they could achieve all sorts of incredible things. These ideas have been long espoused by true conservatives. I want to look at The Conscience of a Conservative by Senator Barry Goldwater. Now, Senator Goldwater goes into how various Republican candidates fell for the trap that conservatism was just an economic theory, but liberalism was more about human beings. He cited President Nixon, who said that Republican candidates should be economic conservatives, but conservatives with a heart. And President Eisenhower said he's a conservative in terms of economics, but a liberal when it comes to human problems. Goldwater goes on, "The same judgment, though in the form of an attack rather than admission, it is advanced by the radical camp. We liberals, they say, are interested in people. Our concern is with human beings, while you conservatives are preoccupied with the preservation of economic privilege and status." Yes, he's addressing the liberals using the Marxist language of class warfare. "Such statements from friend and foe alike do great injustice to conservatives' point of view. Conservatism is not an economic theory, though it has economic implications. The shoe is precisely on the other foot. It is socialism that subordinates all other considerations to man's material well-being. Liberty is tied to private property." It's hard to really appreciate liberty in the abstract. In order to truly appreciate liberty, it has to be tied to something tangible, and private property is that liberty. "It is conservatism that puts material things in their proper place, that it has a structured view of the human being and of human society, in which economics plays only a subsidiary role. The root difference between the conservatives and the liberals of today is that conservatives take account of the whole man, while liberals tend to look only at the material side of man's nature. The conservative believes that man is, in part, an economic, an animal creature, but he is also a spiritual creature with spiritual needs and spiritual desires. What is more, these needs and desires reflect the superior side of man's nature, and thus take precedence over his economic wants. Conservatism, therefore, looks upon the enhancement of man's spiritual nature as the primary concern of political philosophy. Liberals, on the other hand, in the name of a concern for human beings, regard the satisfaction of economic wants as the dominant mission of society. They are, moreover, in a hurry, so that their characteristic approach is to harness the society's political and economic forces into a collective effort to compel progress. In this approach, I believe they fight against nature." Barry Goldwater goes on, "Only a philosophy that takes into account the essential differences between men and accordingly makes provision for developing the different potentialities of each man can claim to be in accord with nature." I'll just read a few excerpts from Barry Goldwater's book, Conscience of a Conservative. But the implication here is clear. What Senator Goldwater was talking about is that this idea amongst the left, they look at these monolithic blocks and that they want to give wealth to the masses of society, the mass as a whole. And conservatives understand that it is individuals that drive societies. It is individuals that drive nations. And conservatives understand that in order to distribute wealth equally amongst all the masses is to take away from someone else's private property, someone else's liberty. And as we see in every single socialist, every communist society that's ever existed, everyone ends up being equally poor. Except, of course, the leaders at the top. And those of you familiar with the Communist Manifesto, Marx talks about when he's implementing his communist ideology in particularly developed countries, he calls for the imposition of a despotism, and that the communists are going to be the ones who will impose it, who are the driving factors, the ones who have all the knowledge, all the tactics, the ones who really drive the engine of the proletariat revolution. So, and this happens in every communist society, that the totalitarian elites get all the wealth and control everything. And conservatives understand this is exactly what happens when the government takes charge, is that the political elites get all the wealth and all the power, while the plebs are sitting at the bottom, broke. Let me ask you, does that sound like the kind of society you want to live in? I highly doubt that. Unless you're a political elite, then I suppose that would be the perfect society, because you'd have all the power and all the wealth, and no one could challenge you. And see, this is ultimately what the statists want, is they want a kind of society in their own image, their own framework, where they control everything and nobody would even have the means to oppose them. And in fact, they'd like a society where no one would even have the will to oppose them as well. And this is why you see all this thought policing going on. We conservatives understand it's important to retain your voice, retain your opinion and ideas, and vigorously defend them, because no one else is going to do it for you. I want to wrap up today's segment with a clip from a real conservative and a real leader, President Ronald Reagan. And this is part of a speech he gave in 1964, also known as A Time for Choosing. Let's roll that clip.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers. Not too long ago, two friends of mine were talking to a Cuban refugee, a businessman who had escaped from Castro. And in the midst of his story, one of my friends turned to the other and said, "We don't know how lucky we are." And the Cuban stopped and said, "How lucky you are. I had some place to escape to." And in that sentence, he told us the entire story. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth. And this idea that government is beholden to the people, that it has no other source of power except the sovereign people, is still the newest and the most unique idea in all the long history of man's relation to man. This is the issue of this election. Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves. You and I are told increasingly we have to choose between a left or right. Well, I'd like to suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There's only an up or down. Man's old age dream, the ultimate in individual freedom consistent with law and order, or down to the ant heap of totalitarianism. And regardless of their sincerity, their humanitarian motives, those who would trade our freedom for security have embarked on this downward course. In this vote harvesting time, they use terms like the Great Society, or, as we were told a few days ago by the president, we must accept a greater government activity in the affairs of the people. But they've been a little more explicit in the past, and among themselves, and all of the things I now will quote have appeared in print. These are not Republican accusations. For example, they have voices that say the Cold War will end through our acceptance of a not undemocratic socialism. Another voice says the profit motive has become outmoded. It must be replaced by the incentives of the welfare state. or our traditional system of individual freedom is incapable of solving the complex problems of the 20th century. Senator Fulbright has said at Stanford University that the Constitution is outmoded. He referred to the president as our moral teacher and our leader, and he says he is hobbled in his task by the restrictions of power imposed on him by this antiquated document. He must be freed so that he can do for us what he knows is best. And Senator Clark of Pennsylvania, another articulate spokesman, defines liberalism as meeting the material needs of the masses through the full power of centralized government. Well, I for one resent it when a representative of the people refers to you and me, the free men and women of this country, as the masses. This is a term we haven't applied to ourselves in America. But beyond that, the full power of centralized government, this was the very thing the founding fathers sought to minimize. They knew that governments don't control things. A government can't control the economy without controlling people. And they know when a government sets out to do that, it must use force and coercion to achieve its purpose. They also knew, those founding fathers, that outside of its legitimate functions, government does nothing as well or as economically as the private sector of the economy.
It's always refreshing hearing a real statesman and a real leader and a true conservative articulate the conservative point of view. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap up our segment here. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join me for more of these shorter segments and also my full episodes that I release every Monday. And be sure to give me a follow also, Alex Thorson at Thorhammer Radio on Twitter. And this is Alex Thorson at Thorshammer Radio, signing off. Good night.
Face the hammer.